Okay, there are some handouts in the back. If you did not pick one up, or those who are coming in, if you want to grab a handout on that table in the back and be able to follow along with the class this morning. We are going to be studying Acts chapter 25 this morning. And just to help us put it in its context, when you get to Acts 25, Paul has been in a prison in Caesarea. Back up for just a couple minutes into Acts chapter 24. And in order for us to understand chapter 25, we need to remember how chapter 24 finished. In Acts chapter 24, Paul was brought before the governor, whose name was Felix. He's brought before Felix and he makes his defense before Felix. And Felix basically decides this guy's innocent, but he's too much of a coward to do anything about it. He's too much of a coward to let Paul go. And so instead of releasing an innocent prisoner, he keeps him in prison. But look down in chapter 24, Acts 24, verse 24. Paul came before Felix, and it says that on this occasion he brought with him his wife Drusilla. Acts 24, verse 24. They sent for Paul. Paul came before them, and he preached to them, the end of verse 24 says, the faith in Christ. And he reasoned to this governor, who was more concerned about his political position than he was about doing what was right. He reasoned to this guy about righteousness. You think Paul got some digs in on doing what's right, even if it's not the popular thing to do? He preached to him about righteousness, about self-control, and about the judgment to come. Now, that's an interesting part of this, because when Paul is preaching on this occasion, who's the judge? Felix is the judge. Paul's the prisoner. Paul's on trial before Judge Felix, and Paul preaches to him about there's a judgment coming, and you're not going to be the judge. You're going to stand before a judge, and you need to be ready for that time. And so the middle of verse 25 says, what was Felix's response to his preaching? What was his reaction? He was afraid. Well, that's a good reaction to have to truth, isn't it? If you hear about having self-control and that there's a judgment coming and you're not ready for it, fear is a pretty good response. Of course, he didn't take that fear any further. He was afraid and he answered, go away for now. When I have a convenient time, a convenient season, that's when I'll call for you. What kind of response is that to the gospel? A common one? Okay. It's not a good time for me right now. What kind of response is that? You hear about righteousness and self-control and the judgment. You say, ah, go away. I'll call for you later. Was he willing to make application? Was he willing to make changes? Was he really, here he is, he's obviously convinced, partly at least, by what's being said, otherwise he wouldn't be afraid, and yet he's not willing to do anything about it. Verse 26 says, meanwhile, he also hoped that money would be given to him by Paul, that he might release him, and so he sent for Paul more often and conversed with him. He thought he'd get a bribe. He knew that if things worked out maybe in his favor, he might get some money out of this. Of course, that was against Roman law anyway to receive a bribe, but I don't think he was concerned about that. So after 2 years, verse 27 says, after 2 years, Porcius Festus succeeded Felix. Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound. Paul's in prison for 2 years in Caesarea. Why? Because Felix was a coward. He wouldn't do what was right. Paul is bound there. Can you imagine? You know, we only have one verse there in verse 27. It encapsulates 2 years of Paul's life. He had just finished his third missionary journey just a couple weeks before this. In fact, you remember in chapter 24, about verse, 11 or 12? Verse 11, where Paul said, it's only been 12 days since I came to Jerusalem, finishing the third missionary journey. So it's only been a matter of weeks, and now he's in prison for 2 years. So now we get to chapter 25. Felix has been removed from office. The Jews despised Felix. He was a very cruel governor. They despised him. Finally, Felix is removed. He is succeeded by Festus. And when Festus took office, he came to Caesarea. Chapter 25, verse 1 says he spent a couple days there, and then after 3 days, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. That's part of his responsibilities, is in Jerusalem, so he's going to find out what's going on with the Jews. Verse 2 says, then the high priest, your translation may say the chief priests, then the chief priests and the chief men of the Jews informed Festus against Paul. Now, how long it had been? 2 years. 2 years had passed since the Jews, since these leading Jews, these chief Jews, 2 years had passed since they had gone before Felix. 2 years had passed since Felix did nothing. 2 years had passed since they went home and went about their daily business, you would think, right? So what's on their mind 2 years later? Paul is still on their... Why have they not moved beyond this? Why haven't they left this behind? They're still seething over the Apostle Paul. Why? What had he done? They didn't want to accept the truth. When you don't want to accept the truth, and the truth is so clear, and Paul made it so prevalent throughout that area, they're trying to get rid of him. Really? You know, if it doesn't work out for you, just move on. Just the guy's in prison. What more do you want? They got that far. They got Paul to be left in prison for 2 years. Festus comes. You know, why press your luck? Festus might let him out of prison if you bring it up again. Just keep your mouth shut. At least Paul will stay in prison. No, they've got one thing on their brain, and that's Paul. So the end of verse 2 says they petitioned him. They came, and it literally means they were begging him. Over and over, they're begging him. Asking a favor, verse 3 says, Governor Festus, can you do us a favor? Now notice what does your Bible say in verse 3? They were asking a favor. What does it say, right? What are the next two words, maybe? Against him. Not against Festus, against Paul. They're not asking, what can we get? Their favor is, we want you to do something against this man. So what we want you to do is we want you to summon him to come to Jerusalem. Why? So that we can put him on trial? No, so we can kill him. You know, if you'll just send for him in Jerusalem, that's all we want you to do. Just dispatch a message, send for him to come to Jerusalem, and we'll take care of the rest, all right? You just get him on the way here, we'll take care of him on the way. That sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? You know, Festus, that's all you got to do is get a message sent out. Now, Festus is new on the job, right? And that's probably why the Jews are going to him. They see some new blood. You know, maybe this guy will be a pushover. He's new on the job. So what is he determined to do in verse 4? Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, that he himself was going back to Caesarea shortly. Therefore, he told these leading Jews, let those who have authority among you, let them go down with me, and let them accuse this man to see if there is any fault in him. They had already done this. But that's Roman law. Look at verse 16. You might tie verse 16 in with this because this is what he told them. Over in verse 16, he says, I answered them, it is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face. It's not right. It's not according to our custom. It is against Roman law for me to bring him here, to allow you to kill him without accusations being brought, without the accused being able to meet his accusers face to face. Does that sound familiar? I mean, is that not the rights even that we have in this land? That you'll be tried by a jury of your peers and that you will have an opportunity to defend yourself? That's what the end of verse 16 says. Not only will he meet his accusers, should he meet his accusers face to face, but it says, and have an opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him. That's the right that he has. Meet his accusers and to be able to give a defense, to give an answer. So basically he's telling them back in verse 5, you can come to Caesarea and approach Paul face to face. That's what the law says, but I'm not going to bring him out here and let you ambush him and let you kill him. And so he heads back. To Caesarea, and after a couple days, some of the Jews come with him. Look at verse 6. He went down to Caesarea, and the next day, where was Festus sitting? On the judgment seat. What is that? Put your mind back there. He was sitting on the judgment seat. This is the same word that's used of Pilate when Jesus was before him. That Pilate went and he sat on the judgment seat. What does that mean? The governor, Pilate back then, same position. The governor now, Festus, at this time, obviously is a man of authority. Obviously, is a man who has a right to disseminate instructions and commands and even verdicts. But the judgment seat is the place where, when he sat there, that was the position. You know, we might think of it as the judge sitting behind his the bench today with his gavel, and that's where he sends forth, and that's where he sets down the verdicts. That's where Festus is. So this is not an informal occasion. Festus is on the seat where judgment, where a verdict is going to be rendered. By the way, this same word is the word that's used in passages like 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, where it says, "We shall all appear before the judgment seat of Christ." Are we all going to be judged? Yes. Where's Jesus going to be sitting? Jesus is going to be sitting on the judgment seat, the place where binding decisions and verdicts are rendered. And once that's rendered, it is for good. And so Festus had Paul brought in before him. Verse 7, chapter 25, verse 7. When Paul had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about, probably in a semicircle, is often how they would do. At least in the Sanhedrin, that's how they would do, so they could put the accused right in the middle. What does verse 7 say? They laid many serious complaints against Paul. You have a translation that says anything different there? Laid many serious complaints against Paul. Grievous charges. Laid many, the New King James says, serious. Some translations say grievous. Are these just, we'll just throw it out and see what sticks. Were these minor things? These were heavy kinds of charges, complaints, grievous kind of things that they are bringing against Paul. Now, notice the plurality of these. It's not just one thing that they're necessarily trying to accuse Paul of. Perhaps they are trying to find something that will stick. You know, maybe we'll find something that really rubs Festus the wrong way. But it's interesting, and I think this is on your handout, just the tenses, the Greek tenses that are used here on your letter B on the front of your handout, down under number 1. The tenses that are used here in the Greek means that they kept on throwing out different charges. They just kept throwing them out. They didn't bring one and issue the charge and then sit down and be quiet. They were on a continual basis at this judgment scene, throwing out these charges. But for every charge that they threw out, the end of verse 7 says, which they could not prove. And the tense there also indicates every time they threw a charge out, there was nothing they could do to prove it. And they couldn't change it. They could throw out all of these charges, but there was nothing, there was no evidence at all in their favor that they could use to prove what they... Wouldn't you be embarrassed? If you're standing before the judge, before the governor, and you're trying to get a man convicted, I don't know if it'd be embarrassment, if you would just feel inept, that you're throwing out all these charges. Okay, where's your evidence? Oh, we don't have any. Well, how do you prove what you're saying? Oh, we can't. Then why are you here? What is the purpose in this? And so verse 8 says, and again the tenses would indicate that Paul was doing this repeatedly. He repeatedly answered for himself. He answered these three charges. Number one, he says, I have not sinned against the law of the Jews. Of course, that was one of their charges. He has sinned against the law of the Jews. Of course, even if that was true, what difference would that make to Festus? Who cares? That's a Jewish matter. That's not for me to decide. But Paul says, I have not sinned against the law of the Jews. Now, had the old law been nailed to the cross? Yes. But was Paul still preaching that old law? He's still using it to preach that Jesus is the Christ. When Paul was going into the synagogues, as was his custom, and reasoning with them about Jesus being the Son of God, what evidence was he using? Well, the first thing he was doing was presenting Old Testament prophecies. And then he was laying down beside it the fulfillment that Jesus of Nazareth had of those Old Testament prophecies. Paul says, I haven't sinned against the law. I've just been proclaiming the law. I haven't done anything by which it would have been inappropriate. Here's the law as a part of God's plan anyway. He says, I haven't sinned against the temple. That was one of their charges, that he had defiled the temple by bringing a Gentile in there. He says, I haven't done that. And they had no evidence that he had either. And he says, nor have I sinned against Caesar. Now, who cares about that? What? How could Paul have sinned against Caesar? I mean, I know how you sin against God. What does he mean, I haven't sinned against Caesar? Okay, maybe they were charging him something with taxes. You know, that would be a horrendous thing if you didn't pay your taxes, right? Somebody said something over here. Okay, he had not broken any Roman laws. Here was Paul. He was a Roman citizen. Here was Paul, and had he done anything to... One of the charges they were bringing against him back in chapter 24 was this idea... where was this? Look in chapter 24, verse 2. When Tertullus, their attorney, the Jewish attorney, was before him the first time, he was lavishing all of these wonderful things upon Felix at the time, talking about how they had enjoyed great peace among them. And then down in verse 5, he says, here, governor, you have brought us great peace. But he says in verse 5, this man is a creator of dissension. He's a creator of riots or insurrections among all the Jews. That's one of the charges is, you know, here we have Roman peace. And that was a big thing that Rome had brought. It was the peace that they had throughout the land. What was the charge being brought against him? You got a troublemaker here. You got somebody that's trying to stir up trouble against Rome, against the Caesar, and all of these riots. So Paul says, haven't sinned against the law, haven't sinned against the temple, haven't sinned against Caesar. And Paul had the evidence on his side. Look at verse 9. But back in chapter 25, verse 9. But Festus What does chapter 25, verse 9 say Festus wanted to do? Wanted to do the Jews a favor. Go back to chapter 24, verse 27. What does the end of chapter 24, verse 27 say about Felix? Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor. Look at chapter 25, verse 9. Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor. Same thing. Good old politicians, right? They're always concerned about doing what is right. Bunch of cowards. They're more concerned about the political position that they are in. They're more concerned about appeasing the crowd. You know, but this is 2,000 years ago, right? Things have so much improved, and we have advanced beyond this. I guess you disagree with that statement. Here's a typical guy who wants to keep the masses happy instead of taking the right road. And so he answered Paul. Here's an interesting thing. He says to Paul, I want you to picture this. The governor sitting on the judgment seat where verdicts are pronounced. Prisoner, verse 9, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things? What? Well, prisoner, here, these Jews are not very happy with you. Would you be okay, you know, if you and I took a trip, you know, let's go on vacation. Let's go to Jerusalem, and there you be tried before me. What? Why would he even suggest that? Ruth? Say the first part. I didn't hear the first part of what you said. Say it again.
He was already
being tried before him. Yes. That doesn't make sense, does it? He's already being tried before Festus. So why would it make any difference to Paul, to the Romans? Why would it make any difference to go down go up in elevation, go down to Jerusalem and be tried there by the same man? Jerry?
Paul was probably thinking in his mind, that didn't work out too good for Jesus.
Yeah, right. That didn't work out so well for Jesus, did it? You know, Jesus got a fair trial in Jerusalem, right? That worked out. Joanne?
Isn't that what the Jews wanted to do, to send him to Jerusalem so they could attack him?
That's what the Jews wanted. They wanted to ambush him up in verse 3.
So if that pleased them.
And that's the whole point. The governor knew it would please the Jews. And so that's what he's going. So it's just a change of venue, right? I mean, we hear about that today, right? Just a change of venue. We'll just go have this trial somewhere else. What's wrong with having the trial right where it was? It was already in progress. Look at what Paul says. Is it verse 10? So Paul said, I stand. The Greek tense indicates I have been in the past. I am still right here. I am currently now standing at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. I'm right here. Everybody's already gathered. I'm standing where I'm supposed to be standing. I am here to be judged. To the Jews, I have done no wrong. Why would I go to Jerusalem? Why would I go back to the heart and the capital of the Jews? To them I have done no wrong. Now look at what he says to Festus. As you very well know. Don't play games. Don't try to put this off on me. Festus, you very well know I haven't done anything wrong. Why would we even continue the trial? What a mockery of a judicious system. Why would you even continue a trial? You know I haven't done anything wrong. And you know that they don't mean anything good towards me. So verse 11, Paul says, for if I am an offender, or if I have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. What does that say about capital punishment, by the way? If I've done something wrong, if I've done something deserving of death, fine, put me to death. But If there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, nobody can deliver them to me. Festus, you don't even have the power or the right to deliver them to me. Okay? Right? Right? Yes. Paul's continuing to try, Cam says, try to find somebody in their right mind to recognize that these are religious matters that they are bringing against him, not civil matters. And for the whole thing, he's completely innocent anyway. But if you're going to talk about the charges, they're not things that need to be before some kind of a Roman judge. And so finally, Paul says, and here's something that we know very well that Paul did at the end of verse 11. Paul says, I appeal to Caesar. What does that mean? I'm going above your head. We're taking this to the Supreme Court. We're taking this to the highest court. As a Roman citizen, that was his right. As a Roman citizen, he had the right. Now, do you think many Romans took advantage of this right? I want to go appear before Caesar. I mean, how many Roman citizens in their right mind would want to go and at this time, who's the emperor? Nero. How many Roman citizens goes, hey, I want to go stand before Nero. But what does Paul know? Paul knows I'm innocent. What does he know? I'm not getting a fair trial here. Nobody's concerned about justice around here. I appeal to Caesar. Now, look at this from two different, maybe three. Look at this from two different positions. Look at it from the standpoint of Paul, the man, the prisoner, the innocent person. I'm not getting a fair shake around here. Let's take this to the next level. As a Roman citizen, I have that right. Let's take this to the next level. Maybe I'll receive some justice up there. All right, now look at this from the position of Paul, the apostle, the preacher, the Christian, the man who's concerned about the gospel being proclaimed to the whole world. Paul has just had opportunity to preach to a governor named Felix. Now, a governor named Festus. He's a Roman citizen. What right does he have? He's got a right to go and preach to Nero himself. So we could look at it from the innocent man perspective of, I deserve this, I deserve a fair shake. Or look at it from a man who wants to preach the gospel's sake. Is he concerned about the gospel? Is the gospel getting a fair shake here? Well, they're trying to suppress the gospel even. So Paul says, you know what? Let's get another audience for the gospel. Richard? That's right. This, as Richard says, this is a part of the whole providential plan of God. Here we have some cowards as governors, but did they provide protection for Paul? Even when we were reading about the commander, Claudius Lysias, the commander there at the temple grounds, who he wasn't necessarily concerned about justice. But what did he did protect Paul from being torn into pieces and being killed. Here are some governors that while they are cowards and not willing to make a right decision. Now, a right decision would have set Paul free. But what is this providing for the gospel? Go back to chapter 23 for just a second and remember this. Remember what Jesus said to Paul in Acts chapter 23. This is when he had, in chapter 23, Paul had spoken before the Sanhedrin. He had talked to them, and of course they're divided and they're in great protest among themselves and dissension, and they were about ready to tear him into pieces in verse 10. You get to chapter 23 and verse 11. The following night, the Lord stood by Paul. The Lord stood by him, and he said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem." What had Paul done in Jerusalem? He had testified for Christ. As you have done that, you must also bear witness at Rome. Jesus says, Paul, you're going to Rome. oh, great, I'll get to see the sights. You know, I'll get to go in the souvenir shops. You know, I'll get the postcards and write back home. Paul, why are you going to Rome? Preach the gospel. To bear witness for Christ. Who's going to make that happen? Felix, Festus, Agrippa, all of these guys who maybe had no desire at all to know about the gospel, but because of this system, by the way, this Roman system that was in place, we don't have time to talk about how the whole providence of God worked and how this was the perfect time for the gospel to being spread in that area because of the Roman peace that existed. But Paul has the opportunity, back in chapter 25. Paul has the opportunity, and he says, I appeal to Caesar. And so Festus at that point, Festus really didn't have an option. At that point, Festus had to say, okay. Verse 12 says he did confer with his council, but once a Roman citizen appeals unto Caesar, that's it. Paul effectively brought that hearing to a close. That was the end of it. All Festus had to do, if he had a gavel, was to hit his gavel. Okay, we're done. This guy just appealed to Caesar. We can't do anything else. That is the final straw here. And so Paul effectively shut down that whole matter at that point. And he was supposed to be sent to Rome, although Festus apparently did not get in a whole big hurry to do it. So, you come to verse 13. In verse 13, we are introduced to King Agrippa. Now, hold your finger there and go back to chapter 12 for just a second. And who are we reading about in chapter 12? Or who did we already read about and study about in chapter 12? Here we have read about it was time that Herod the king stretched out his hand to harass some of the church. This Herod, in chapter 12, his name was Agrippa. He is not called by his name Agrippa there. He's called Herod. But Herod was a name sort of like Pharaoh was the name of the ruler in Egypt. That was not his given name. That was just what he was. He was the Pharaoh. And now this man was the Herod. And in chapter 12, this guy's name was Agrippa. Get to chapter 25, this guy's name is Agrippa. But they're not the same guy. They're two different guys. In chapter 25, this is Agrippa the Second. And that's what he's called in history. He's called Agrippa the Second. He is the son of Agrippa the First, who killed James the Apostle. Just to try to keep all of these Bible characters in perspective, he's not. And I think I have all of this listed on your handout down at the bottom of the front page. He was the last of the Jewish kings who would rule during this time. He was going to rule. Agrippa the Second would. He was going to rule right up until A.D. 70, and so he would be the last one. He's the great grandson of the guy that we really know as Herod. Herod the Great, who slaughtered the infants trying to kill Jesus. This Herod, Agrippa the Second, came into power at a young age and had been given power over certain territories in Palestine. After some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea. Now, for just a second, go back to chapter 24. In chapter 24, verse 24, we read about Felix and his wife Drusilla. And what was she called in chapter 24? She was a Jewish. She was a Jewess. So here's Drusilla in chapter 24. Now we get to chapter 25. We're introduced to Agrippa and Bernice. Agrippa, Bernice, and Drusilla are all their brothers and sisters. Agrippa, Bernice, Drusilla, brothers and sisters, the three children of Agrippa the First. Unfortunately, Bernice is not only Agrippa's sister, she is listed here like his companion because she was also that. She was his incestuous lover as well, if that'll make you a little uneasy. Agrippa and Bernice, she if you study about Bernice, she was a very loose, scandalous woman. She became the mistress of some of the Roman leaders. You go down and read about Vespasian and Titus. She became even their mistress, their lover. Here's a warped woman. Anyway, we're running out of time. They came to Festus. Festus saw Agrippa here and said, "Hey, great. I'm going to tell Agrippa about Paul." And so we've got to summarize this. But Festus laid Paul's case before Agrippa. And basically he rehearsed. You start in verse 14. And he rehearsed what we've already read about. He tells him, "Hey, I went to Jerusalem. When I got to Jerusalem, the Jews said, 'Hey, you need to hear about this Paul.' And he said, 'No, we're going back to Caesarea.'" So now you get down to verse 16. We read verse 16 where he told him what the law of the Romans was. In verse 17, he tells him what happened when he got back to Caesarea. So he rehearses those events as well. Look at verse 18 where he says, "When the accuser stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I supposed." I figured they were going to have all sorts of evidence against him. I was already ready to give perhaps a guilty verdict. I was surprised. They had nothing on this guy. But all they had were some questions about their religion, the Jewish religion. And they had some questions about some guy named Jesus who had died and whom Paul kept saying, and he wouldn't shut up about it. He kept affirming that Jesus was alive. I don't know. This just sounded weird to me. There was this guy who was dead, Paul saying he's alive, and for some reason these Jews are just all wigged out about it. That's what I got out of it. And so he says in verse 20, "Because I was uncertain," New American Standard says, "I was at a loss." I think the Old American Standard says, "I was perplexed." I didn't know what to do. Not that he didn't know what the truth was. Not that he didn't recognize truth from error. He said, "I didn't know what to do because I wanted to keep the Jews happy. And so I tried to figure out a way to keep the Jews happy, but not condemn Paul." And then he finally says in verse 20, he's talking to Agrippa again. He finally says in verse 21, he appealed unto Caesar. When he appealed unto Caesar, that was it. Couldn't do anything. So you get to verse 23. And we've got just 100 seconds. No, 100 seconds. Don't hold up one finger. That's 100 seconds. It's a minute and 40 seconds. Okay, you get to verse 23. And so what happened? I want to get this picture as we close. Get this picture. Agrippa, the next day, they come together. There's Agrippa, there's Bernice. What does it say in verse 23? They came into this assembly with great pomp. It's the Greek word phantasia. All right? When we think of phantasia, this is a big occasion. All right? We've got the king here. We've got the governor here. It says we've got all the chief men. We've got the leading men of the city. This is a festive occasion. We're going to have a party. I'm sure that you can't have that many people together and not have food and drink and enjoyment. And we're going to come together and hear Paul. Now, think about it from Paul's perspective. He gets to preach to all of these people. Next week, when we get to chapter 26, he's preaching to all of these people who are sitting here for a festive occasion. And in chapter 25, what do we see? All of these people in great pomp and beauty and glamour. And then Paul is brought in. And Paul is still in chains. He'll say in chapter 26, he's in chains. This prisoner's brought in chains. What a scene that would have been. And he's getting ready to preach to them about Jesus. Come back next week. We'll pick up here and talk about what Paul said to these people on that occasion.